He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star.
Baby, you can drive my car. And baby, I love you. And we're gonna start with Jay because as we talked in last week's show, we discussed the fact that he was going cross country west to east in a Jeep Grand Cherokee, and now he will give us a road report.
Well, I love road trips, so it was a great week. It's that simple.
What did you find out in the middle of the country?
It's big.
Yeah.
It's big.
People
lots of grass.
People kind of forget that.
Snowbanks. But it's interesting. I started out in San Francisco and got on the highway. I flew in. And half an hour later, I was in the car. I had a little small U-Haul trailer in back of it. So I was not quite as free to move as otherwise. But it towed very easily and very well. It was a non-issue, really. Like Robin mentioned, it was a Jeep Grand Cherokee, new car, all the bells and whistles.
But a six-cylinder, not an eight.
A six, perfectly adequate, actually. But my first reaction, I got on the highway, seven lanes coming out of San Francisco, Oakland, actually, and going towards Sacramento. And it's a different country. People actually use the right lanes. And people use the right lane starting
for the right
with
reasons.
The utmost right lane and then move over one, two, three, four, five, six. And at some point, there were seven lanes, I think. And traffic flowed perfectly well. It was a pleasant surprise.
Did you see any self-driving vehicles in those lanes at all that you could have identified? Maybe
I don't know. It was evening and nighttime, so it was hard to see in the cars. But there were people. I think there were people behind wheels. So I'm not sure there were any self-driving cars.
Let's talk about the right lane thing for one quick second.
Sure.
Because how is that? You know, it's something that we complain about here in this very congested
three-lane or two-lane.
Yeah.
Highway system, yes.
But do you think it's because there are seven lanes?
No, I think it's because it's...
People know how to drive?
Well, maybe. It certainly is an education thing, I think. And I think it's a terminology thing. And people who know me and know that I will go on a rant very easily once we talk about this. There's no slow lane, traveling lane, passing lane. There's a sign... And actually, which is the law in quite a few states now, that says keep right except to pass. And if you apply keep right except to pass, you're driving in the right lane, period.
It's always, I mean, that keep, they didn't make new signs for that.
No, but the laws are different from state to state.
Okay. All right. So
but anyway, so yeah, that was the start of the trip. So I started with a good impression. And it's a big country. It's actually a lot of fun driving through, you know, California, Nevada,
Utah.
I had never seen the Salt Lakes, and it's a pretty impressive sight. I mean, it goes on for miles and miles and miles and miles of just salt. It looks like snow when you see it up close. It's a little different, but it was cool. The plains in Wyoming, when you come out of Salt Lake City and go towards Cheyenne, long uphills and big rolling high plateaus, plenty of space to drive. So you can actually, I used the cruise control for most of the trip until I got into the Midwest, and traffic was a lot more dense once you get close to Chicago, you know, between Des Moines and Chicago, and then on between Chicago and then whole turnpike on I-90 between Chicago and all throughout Ohio, there's a lot more traffic, and it's a lot harder to have a standard cruise control and keep it on. So
smart cruise control would have been the ideal for that kind of driving, maybe.
Where maybe,
it rises although, and you know, falls with
I
the
was
speed
towing
of
a little trailer, so you're not quite as nimble, and so you actually drive on the slower side of things. I was very conservative in my driving, and it makes for a relaxed drive too when you're not constantly scouting for
Speed traps.
Speed traps, yep.
So, what were the speed limits posted, the highest and the lowest?
Out west, a lot of states are at 80 miles an hour, and, yeah. and so you can just
Texas,
drive.
I think, has a speed limit of 85 on their interstate. So, yeah. And Montana, was it Montana or Wyoming that used to have a no speed limit situation as long as you were driving safely? And I don't think they have that anymore, but for a long time they had posted
Correct.
Limits, but they weren't enforcing anything. If long as you weren't driving recklessly on the open roads.
Montana was
Do they still have that?
Famous for
that.
I'm not sure. I think that I possibly. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But having gone through that, you know, because there's this big world out there, which is just fabulous to remember. And then we all have our very tiny devices, which are our little world out of which, you know, emit peeps such as, well, no steering wheels. Well, self-driving cars. Well,
oh, don't get me going on cell service. Oh, that's the one thing. Half the country is still on 3G, which is mind-boggling. You try to get online on your phone out in the middle of Wyoming. And
was there no signal? Or
oh, there was signal. It's just 3G. You try to pull up a website on your phone, and it's just like remembering the day.
Dial-up.
Exactly. Yeah. It's actually it's pretty
scary.
But
that's relevant when you talk about all technology all the time and having to be connected, no?
Well, when you see the Verizon map or the AT&T map of the U.S., that's cell phone coverage.
No way.
Allegedly, but now just to get back to his 3G versus 4G or whatever it's up to. Is it up to 5 yet?
Not yet.
No.
Okay.
But don't you need that? I mean, they're very close to 5 in a lot of places, but yeah. Don't you need that connection and coverage for everything to work the way that it does?
It's...
Presumably?
Presumably, it certainly helps, and it makes things a little quicker. I mean, I could get online with the 3G just to forever.
I understand, but does that not affect your remotely driving vehicle, for example?
Well, I don't have a driven
Not
one,
quite
so I don't
sure.
Know
no, the remotely driving, if we're talking about self-driving vehicles, once they're autonomous, they should be self-sufficient.
Without any Gs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So... I guess part of this fun thing on the trip is looking at all the vehicles on the road, too. And obviously there are a lot of trucks. And when you drive, you know, pretty much nonstop, 600 or 700 miles a day, you get to relate to the people who do that for a living and who do this day after day after day after day and probably, I think, put between 120,000 and 150,000 miles a day, a year.
On their vehicles.
On their vehicles and spend that time on the road. When you drive, you know, 600-700 miles a day, it doesn't leave you much time to do anything else. You're not
touristing.
Yeah.
You're not touristing. You're not exercising. You're just sitting in a vehicle and driving, which is okay for a week. But doing it week after week after week is a whole different thing.
Gives you a whole new respect. What are the roads like?
Out west, they're pretty good.
Okay.
You get into the Midwest. Of course, you get into Pennsylvania, and your car starts falling apart.
Right.
Yeah, what were the roughest states? Indiana, Pennsylvania, as far as roads, and what was the most boring state you came through, if there was one?
And there's none of it is boring.
But some
it's
of it's
all
different.
Different. Some of it is different. And you know, I spend a lot of time looking at vehicles on the road too. So you know, you have trucks. You have you go out west. You see a lot of RVs. Last year, I did not a full cross country, but I came back from Arizona through the southern route and during the winter, early winter, and it you see a lot of big RVs. There are some very big, very nice RVs. You also see little RVs, you know, converted Sprinter vans, really cool recreational vehicles. So it was interesting.
Last question. Did you get a sense of how segmented we are in terms of different cars for different places? Or was it just like if you had to do the USA Today of cars, what would you do?
No, I know that from having looked at statistics. We know that, you know, different cars sell in different states, different markets.
We might know it, but we don't talk about it because we don't think about it. It's just like the
but
weather is
actually,
where
Actually, I
are.
Was surprised, and I think I told Robin this. I got back, and I was actually surprised to see a lot of cars, non-trucks.
SUV.
We not SUVs, not pickup trucks. But I thought, out west anyway, a lot of cars, passenger cars. And I was surprised. And maybe they're not brand new, because we know that the trend is
going towards SUVs and trucks.
SUVs and trucks.
That's what the automotive industry thinks is happening, and Ford is going to practice that because they're going to dismantle some of their passenger cars. Chevrolet's not far behind, and they're going to concentrate on the SUV lines, the Edges and the Explorers, which some people call cars, but their title is trucks for whatever reason. They get a special break on MPGs and that kind of thing, and they all sit up higher. But Jay's comment is well taken, because I suspect down in Florida, and I haven't been there lately in a couple of years, but I would think Florida would be a state maybe of more passenger car type vehicles than SUVs, if only because of the theoretical aging of its population, and the people that are down there like the comfort of the passenger cars as opposed to the roughness of the SUV truck type cars that they perceive is the difference between a passenger car ride and a truck and SUV type ride. But up here in New England, there's no question, Vermont, New Hampshire, you've got the Outbacks, which rule the real northern states, New England states, in Vermont and New Hampshire, and they ride higher, and they ride a little bit more more stiffly, but they are the norm for the winter weather type of needs of people.
Quick question: did you see a lot of electric vehicles in between outside of California, or?
I did not see a lot of electric vehicles, no. And I saw some Tesla charging stations with like a dozen chargers with
nobody there.
Nobody there. In the middle of, I think it was Nebraska at some point.
So there you go, listeners. To our points that we've been making on this show for weeks on end, the concept of electric vehicles being used for long-distance transportation pleasures has yet to take hold in a big fashion way. And Jay was very good to be looking for that kind of thing. And the comment he has just made is confirmation to our views on this station that electric cars aren't going to get into the
your views on this
long
program.
Distance. Yes,
your
that's
views
correct.
On this program, not necessarily the station, because you hear different
well, that's
things.
Right, the program. Right?
But what I'm trying to find out is, does that mean that there are a bunch of people in Nebraska who have Teslas?
No, I think these charging stations are in, travel plazas.
And Tesla probably put them in.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Because Tesla comes equipped with a computer program or a login of every charging station known to Tesla that's in the entire country, so that if you do drive a Tesla and you do need to figure out where you're going to find your next charge, you can dial it up on the big screen and they will tell you where to go.
So how do you create the, once again, infrastructure to,
you build it.
For charging.
You build it.
VW's
going to build a charging infrastructure station. Porsche is going to do the same thing.
Is every company going to?
Well, I think we'll see standards in the foreseeable future. I mean, we use the same nozzles for gasoline.
Right.
And remember, the last big change we had in nozzles, and that has nothing to do with anything, but it's just to say that when we back in the 70s, when we went to unleaded gas, remember we went from those larger nozzles.
Right.
I think we all remember here.
Put the old non-unleaded gas nozzles.
So,
and diesel is different too.
It was an easy standard, but yet again, it took time,
and it took
creating the standard.
But the concept of time, is fine for a group of people who know what time is, and then you've got a generation and a half that has a completely different notion of time. Whereas, unless you basically stick them in a car and say, hey, we're driving across country, because, if your entire universe is, I send a text, it gets to Abu Dhabi in no time, then you don't really have a sense of, Daddy, are we there yet? When you...
I think if we go back to the discussion, the broader discussion about electric vehicles, again, technology is evolving. It's evolving fast. Robin just mentioned the Porsche. And it is true that, we have this market of electric vehicles. We think of high-end vehicles setting the benchmark, like Tesla, and less expensive vehicles coming in and more mass market vehicles like the smaller Tesla, like the Chevy Bolt, like the Nissan Leaf. But, and here's a problem for Tesla, and I'm going on a sidetrack here. Porsche's new electric vehicle, which will be coming out in the next 2 years, in both a sedan form and I believe a wagon form, and they certainly can build a full SUV after that, has a performance of a Tesla, has a 300-mile range, and to the point to the question of recharging, can recharge to have a range of 250 miles within 15 minutes.
Have that too.
Okay.
Because you've got evolving battery technology and you're getting evolving and chargers. And,
but if you already have one, does it matter?
Yeah, well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And 15 minutes is not a lot more time than pumping gas, because I know that every time I stop for gas, between stopping for gas,
going in and get coffee and hitting the restroom,
whatever, it's 20, 20 minutes. 25 minutes.
Yeah, exactly.
So the 15-minute charging is not bad at all. So we're getting there.
On the other hand, there are long-distance drivers, such as Jay and myself, and Jay may not be, but I often go a full 400 miles between stops, just because that's what I do.
Right.
And the 300-mile thing is closer to 400 than 250, that type of situation. I don't have the anxiety level that I think the electric people are going to have for a while when they look at their electric charge meter in their car and they see it's down to a quarter to an eighth and they don't really know whether they've got 40 miles to go to empty or 80 miles to go to empty, like I can figure out with my gas gauge after a while. And Jane probably knows exactly how far he could go in the Cherokee.
Buy an electric car now or would you wait a year or two?
Depends what you're using it for. I'd buy a Bolt today if I were just getting an electric car. Jay and I both sort of agree on this point. We've both driven the Bolt. It's fabulous. It lists at 37.5 minus tax benefits or a last year model with rebates. And it's a very neat car. It's a little larger than the Fit. It's probably more like the Prezza size Subaru. Squarish, very practical, very comfortable, zippy as all get out because electric motors are zippy, and a lot of fun. And it's got a 285-mile or 65-mile posted range, which for around here is wonderful, day in and day out, because you charge it every night when you bring it home to your garage.
And so what if you lived in Brooklyn or something?
No problem. You can get up here and back into Brooklyn without charging it up here, but you'll find a charging station up here.
And where do you charge it in Brooklyn?
When you buy a Bolt, you're going to put a charging station in, or there'll be a garage. The garages you park in will have charging
stations. And what if you street park?
You're going to have it charged somewhere so that you're going to not worry about when getting in the car and going off to your next destination.
Okay. I just wonder.
I know where you're going with those questions, it's not going to be a big ubiquitous car for everybody, but it's a great car and it's ready for today.
So, speaking of cars coming up in the foreseeable future, I was taking a quick look at the 25 cars worth waiting for that Car and Driver publishes.
Claim.
Claim that we're waiting for.
Right. Claim that they're worth waiting for.
I haven't read the article yet, so I can't tell you how many
and
I'm not interested
you agree
in.
And a few, a few are relevant in my mind, and others are not, but...
Let's hear the relevant ones.
The relevant ones, or sort of relevant, are a mid-engine Corvette for us car guys. I mean, I think we've been talking about a mid-engine Corvette ever since the first Corvette came out in 1953, I think.
Can't wait to jump in.
And it's been a myth ever since. It seems for real now. It's not an April Fool's. I don't think.
Sure.
I don't know. The question is Corvette going to find it's an April Fool's for them? Because I went to the car show with car guys. Jay was absent, and one of them is a Corvette guy, and he has absolutely no interest in a mid-engine Corvette. He says it's a travesty that Corvette's think that that's the way they need to go to do it. I think there's going to be a big split within the Corvette ownership group about whether or not they would be happy if the mid-engine Corvette totally took over the line, which it probably is going to do.
So,
and they'll keep their existing Corvettes much the way I keep my Jaguar XJR, which I will not replace with the new one because I don't like it, mid-engine or not. They're neither is mid-engine. They're both front-engine. It's going to be interesting to see. It's blazing the cover of Car and Driver as we look at it here. And it's a very nice-looking car, but do you have to have a mid-engine Corvette, or do you want the
Well, nobody
original?
Needs a Corvette. Okay, that's for
the that's
beginner.
True.
Okay, right? So I think the mid-engine Corvette is a cool thing. It's going to be a great sports car. The old Corvette or the old
current old
Corvette is not going away. There are talks already that they're going to produce
both
side by side. And then to my bigger my thinking is that maybe Corvette is finally going to become a brand and not just a model. And I've been saying this actually for some time, and Jill and I have had this conversation about brands. I think that having a two model lineup within the Corvette family can only help the Corvette brand.
And I'll stay on the I disagree point of view for that particular model only. I think the same goes for the Mustang. Same goes for the Camaro. I don't think you can have two types of Camaros. You have different models within the Camaro and the Mustang range, but not something as radical as a front engine versus a mid-engine version of the same vehicle. So this is the auto world is all about. I don't know what the new millennials are doing. That's the interesting thing is about these new guys that are a generation or two below us, and they're not buying the same kinds of houses, to digress just for 2 seconds on real estate versus cars, and they're probably not buying the same kind of cars, which is what's happening with the passenger car business. Because SUVs are there. So whether they're going to switch over, the new ones will like the mid-engine Corvette because that's the way they think and they have alternatives in mid-engine cars, or whether that they're going to be true to the original Corvette will remain to be seen. And this is going to be watched for the next 2 to 5 years, I'm sure.
Well, let me ask one last word just to up it one.
Up the ante?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Most Corvette owners own... or not most, but many Corvette owners own more than one Corvette.
That's
so
true.
There's no problem in having a mid-engine Corvette.
Well, Jay Leno will have one right away, I'm sure.
Jay Leno will have everything. He'll have a Corvette with a jet engine, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Ed, I don't dare ask what is a mid-engine Corvette versus a front engine.
Okay.
The engine's behind the rear seat, the front seats of the car. It's behind you when you're sitting in your car like you're
okay,
in
so
correct.
The
but you. Mid-engine means that the engine is behind the cockpit, but slightly in front of the rear wheels.
Right.
A Porsche 911, for instance, is a rear engine car because the engine is not only in the back,
it's
in back of the rear axle.
All right.
Which
or
makes
over.
It a car that makes no sense at all from an engineering standpoint, but nevertheless, it is one of the best sports cars around.
All right, so in 56 seconds, who's going to do what?
Well, the Ford diesel is advertising and is being available in the 150, and it's cracking the magic for trucks, a 30-mile-per-gallon mark. I laugh a little bit as I say this, although radio people can't see me doing that.
You can hear your voice.
They can, because there's an ad running about the Ford 30-mile-per-gallon F-150 diesel model being now available, and it's towing a huge trailer. On the TV version of the ad, which is anybody who knows anything knows that particular truck is not getting 30 miles per gallon as it's towing, unless it's a Mirage trailer. But anything towing any weight or putting any weight in the pickup bed will reduce the 30 mile per gallon theoretical highway capability of any truck below the stated paper version.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. To be continued. This is Car Keys.